This meeting of the Senate Environment and Energy Committee will come to order, and we do have a quorum, which I appreciate after people being here late last night. And apologies to witnesses and people who came, especially those out of town, who came here for the hearing yesterday afternoon or evening and got bumped till this morning. But we have Senator Saxog, you have several bills. We're going to start with you. Did you want to begin with Senate File 57, I understand?
That would be great, Mr. Chair. Morning. Senate File 57 which we were presenting today is a bill that would allow the soil and water conservation districts to purchase seedling stock from the state nurseries. With me today is some testifiers. You guys want to come up, please? I have with me Mr. Chair and members Tom Peterson from the Minnesota Farmers Union, Mark Thiel from Carlton County Soil and Water Conservation District, and Steve Johnson, President of AsME DNR Policy Committee.
Welcome to the committee. Who wants to begin?
Mr. Chair, I'm Mark Thiel from Carlton County. I'm a supervisor for the district. I also serve on the State Board for the Minnesota Association of Conservation District as Area 3 from Northeast Minnesota as our delegate there. The language was changed a couple years ago to limit the trees that the soil and water districts could purchase from our state nurseries. Some of our districts now have dropped out of tree sales because of that limitation. There's about four different critical points. The one that really comes into play in the conservation work that we do is this seed source verification and the state nurseries, because they harvest trees, seedlings from the regions of the state that we replant the trees. There's 91 districts. There's about 85 districts that do tree sales, shrub sales for conservation work across the state. And a lot of the work that we do is also funded by other program partners, and that seed source verification for our work is critical, and the private nurseries are not always capable of that source. So then without this, we are very limited what we can plant. Some of the other things is I think what brought about this language change is that the actual number of trees that are being replanted, the numbers are dropping. So I'm sure the privates have come by and say this is unfair competition. They want access to more sales, and we would really like to point out that we really want to be proactive. We want to really try to look at this issue. What's the bigger issue here today? We should be talking about how do we get more reforestation, more canopy, all the things that conservation does with our riparian areas, that we want to put conservation in those areas, work with landowners. The other thing that's critical on these bare rooted, if you're working in a swamp where you got to trudge through mud for half a day to get to, you can't be carrying these plugs out there. You do need the bare-rooted seedlings to go out there and do that work. Another real factor that's been very beneficial to you, to us, is having these Minnesota Conservation Corps workers, the younger ones that are working interns. They do a lot of this physical work. So our programs match up. Our staff aren't always out there planting trees. Our staff are there to assist. Our tree sales are an education and a promotion. I have some pictures. If you're interested, I could pass you out of one of the Arbor Day plantings that we do. If you're interested, I'd like to show you some of those.
We'll have somebody pick them up to distribute.
That's a huge component of what we do is our education work that we carry on with our fellow tree partners, our business community, the Northeast Minnesota. We have Sappy Fine Papers that's a sponsor of one of our programs. Those seedlings that the kids get out and plant that day that we do that work, they're donated from the tree nurseries. So it's an in-kind it's a great effort that we have going there, and we want to continue that work. We want to keep on growing what we're doing and not shrinking it down by the loss of this activity. And from what they tell me, the actual budget this language doesn't cost us any money to change this to go back. It actually helps the nurseries keep their business level up so that the amount of trees we've got reports that show that the tree numbers ceilings are going down, but they're actually returning after the decline. The housing industry, people would buy bundles of 25 trees from us. You can't go to the privates and generally get 25. We will put shrubbery bundles where they can get five shrubs of Nanking cherries. They can mix and match with us. It's actually a service that we do our tree sales for, and then with larger plantings, we'll typically refer them to go back to the other sources where they can buy those larger quantities. Our own private sales were only up to like 200 to an individual at one time. Most of them in those 25 tree bundles that we do. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union, and we support Senate File 57 and appreciate Senator Saxog carrying this legislation that's important to our conservation-minded farmers. This legislation, we saw a lot of resolutions come in from our counties, especially in the last couple of years since this change was made. A lot of our farmers that buy a lot of trees for shelter belts, for conservation projects around the state are very concerned about availability of bare root seed source verification costs, varieties that they get. And so we hear this a lot from our farmers since the change was made, and they'd like the change to be made in this bill. Farmers have a long history of buying and planting thousands of trees for all these and working with the soil and water conservation districts, and it's been a great program. I'd also say that I think that it, you know, we're concerned too that I don't know how familiar most of the committee is with the tree sales that soil and water conservation districts do, usually in the springtime. But a lot of counties are starting to consider or are not going to do the tree sales anymore. And so that is a loss for everybody. And so if they're, you know, we're doing, you know, 50% we're buying from a private nursery and 50% from the state tree nursery before, and now they're not going to buy from anybody. And now the farmers are going to, yes, they're going to, do the conservation projects, but it was good to have the forms and to go through this process, and it made conservation easy and made you think about it, and it's been a good working program. We planted a lot of trees in Minnesota with this project, and I'm concerned about that. Farmers Union is very concerned about that, and so we think that this is an easy change. We're not going back to where we're selling to individuals. We're just allowing it through soil and water and having it that way, and so that is where I think that this is a bill where we can keep it. It's where it's a win-win for everybody, and appreciate your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, sir.
Mr. Chair, my name is Steve Johnson. I'm president of the AFSCME DNR Policy Committee. I want to thank Senator Saxog and the rest of the Senate for allowing me to speak on behalf of this bill, in favor of this bill. I'm qualified to speak on this bill. My credentials are I've been a state employee for 35 years, employed as a forestry technician up in the Northwest geographic area, Region 1, in the Warroad, Grigla, Winooska areas. With that, we have a huge land base, geographic land base, and the timber sale program is very large, and with that is a heavy tree planting program. So the state is still going to be allowed to furnish trees under the current bill, but they are no longer, we aren't going to be able to help the private landowners like we used to. With that, we've had an active private forest management program. I've worked 35 years, as I said. I spanned four decades, and so I've seen a lot of trends, and like my partner said, we should be talking more about planting trees and incentives, cost-share programs to provide incentives to plant trees instead of making it more difficult to purchase trees. There are lots of trends. Back in the heydays of the CRP, the late 80s, early 90s, in our area alone, we planted over a million trees. Now those, that's gone by the wayside, but, things come around again, and we need the state nurseries there to be able to supply that demand when it does come around.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Johnson, would you maybe fill the committee in briefly on the difference between bare root and encapsulated
Containerized stock?
Yeah,
containerized. Yeah, bare root. The nice thing about the state nurseries is bare root stock. They don't compete with the containerized stock nurseries. The containers have a root plug, a dirt plug, so that it isn't a shock to the root system. And there's a place for those containers. When you're planting in wet ground and you can't get the trees established during that springtime, that narrow window for bare root, then you should go with containers. But the bare root stock is a shorter window to plant trees. The state nursery, that's what they do. You know, back in those periods, they were selling over 20 million trees as a state. Now they're held to a cap, and they have to work in the black. They have to sell so many trees. They won't be able to do that if they're only allowed to sell trees to the state. I have some bittersweet news. Last week, I was accepted through Soil and Water Conservation, the NRCS program in Roseau, for a 3.5-acre cost share in 2014 and a 3.5-acre tree planting cost share in 2015. Well, in 2014, I won't be able to buy trees from the state of Minnesota, and the Soil and Water Conservation districts won't be able to sell trees to me. So the reason why it's bittersweet is I might not be able to do the practice. So it's very important. So we truly care about conservation and care about the environment. We will support this bill.
Thank you. Senator Saxog, did you have any more witnesses?
No. That concludes testimony. Stand for questions.
Questions from members of the committee. Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess the one thing that does concern me is that I think on the basis of the decision that the state made here in the last couple of years to create the current situation, we have had local growers, private growers, that have actually been in the process of expanding their output. And I know the availability of trees was talked about. And obviously, when we're talking about planting stock, we recognize that that type of thing doesn't automatically happen overnight. And I think that to say that we need now to go back to some of the systems that we had before because of unavailability, having had private growers expanding to meet that need, now to pull the rug out from under them is really not fair to the private growers in this scenario either. And I have great concern about that.
Senator Marty, Senator Weber. You know, bare root production of seedlings has always been a limited market and a large market, and a market that has to deal with huge volumes. Otherwise, it's just not, it's quote unquote kind of not worth doing. And the beauty of the state nurseries has been is that. Because it's all done in Minnesota, we don't have to worry about invasive species coming in. And, you know, because in the case of encapsulation, we can't produce in this state enough encapsulated trees for all the nurseries that we need. So they come in from Canada. They come in from out of state. But they are encapsulated. The bare roots, we can produce them here. If a bare root comes in from out of state, we are dealing with the types of diseases that we all consider in the forests of northern Minnesota. So we think that in this particular limited amount of volume, but a very important one, that the state nursery should be allowed to sell trees.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you talk about encapsulated being able to come from out of state. Because these would only be sold through Soil and Water Conservation districts, don't they limit the stock that they would sell? I've planted 500 trees from my Soil and Water Conservation district. They don't sell whatever the consumer wants. They sell what's appropriate, what is native to that Soil and Water Conservation District. So are invasive species really a concern, or is there something that I'm missing?
Senator Marty, Senator Benson, you say these 500 trees that you want to purchase?
No,
I don't quite understand your question totally.
Mr. Chair, I've planted 500 trees that I purchased through my Soil and Water Conservation District. They're only appropriate native to that Soil and Water Conservation District. So where would the invasive species challenge come in? If the Soil and Water Conservation District, buying from either the state nursery in this case or a private nursery, only approves certain plants for sale through their bare root sale, how would we get an invasive species introduced?
That's the procedure that we have. We don't sell invasives. We're looking at those native species that would perform in your area.
Right.
That's the huge thing that we're working for is we have our name on those trees that you bought. We want our name as reputable as we can, that we stand behind those trees, that you have a successful planting, and that your children will see those trees 20, 30 years from now that they grew, and that's why we really enjoy working with our stock that we get from the nurseries.
Chair Benson.
I understand that, Mr. Chair, but my question is, well, let me back up. The reason for wanting only state-grown stock was to limit the invasive species risk. But if the Soil and Water Conservation District is already limiting what you can sell, even if it's purchased from Canada or a private nursery in some other way in bare root, if the Soil and Water Conservation District is already limiting what you can purchase, doesn't that stop the invasive species risk?
I might be able to speak on the state of Minnesota collecting the seed. They collect it from northern zone 3 hardy trees within the state of Minnesota. They extract the seed at the nurseries. They plant the seeds, and it's sold. It's already a winter hardy tree. Then, say, the Soil and Water Conservation Districts purchase those trees. They're already grown in Minnesota. The invasive species is not the issue that it would be bringing seed from other areas. The other critical part about this is the trees are already winter hardy for our zone. But the invasive species, and you're saying the 500 minimum, the Soil and Water Conservation.
No, that wasn't my point at all. Okay. The Soil and Water Conservation District, for my district, tells me these are the only things you can buy through the Soil and Water Conservation District. I can't buy an invasive species through my Soil and Water Conservation District. So we've already handled the invasive species piece. It doesn't matter where the stock comes from because my Soil and Water Conservation District wouldn't let me plant an invasive species. I wouldn't choose to, but they would not even make it available through the program. So I don't understand how limiting the source back here is necessary to solve the invasive species problem. It's already solved at the Soil and Water Conservation District level.
Senator Marty, can I reply to that?
Mr. Thale, go ahead.
Yes. The concept there is if the Soil and Water Districts have to drop out because we can't have the volume of trees that we supply, if our county has dropped our tree sales, so now you as a private individual, you just shop around. You don't have the backbone of the district doing that research to look out at the nurseries, everybody that's supplying. So we're the filter that's protecting you so that if your goal is to plant non-invasives, if we're not there, then where do you go? Do you shop online? How do you get your trees? That's the real benefit of the districts because we have the expertise, the technical knowledge to go out there and filter and put it on our tree sales that way. That when our clients come in and buy those, they have our reputation standing behind that these are non-invasives. And if we lose our ability to do that, then we open tree sales up to invasives.
We have one witness who wanted to speak with concern from the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association, Mr. Powers. Power, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, committee members. My name is Tim Power. I represent the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association. I'm a semi-retired tree grower myself, but I grew much larger stock. The agreement that was reached in the 2011 legislature followed many years of discussion on this issue. One of the major issues that precipitated the agreement in 2011 was the issue of the DNR, State Forest Nurseries, needing to break even on an annual basis. During four of the 6 years prior to 2011, the DNR had not actually even broken even at that point. The agreement that occurred in 2011, as shown by the report that came to the legislature last year, has produced a plan to move forward that will put the DNR in the black with respect to the state forest nurseries, even with the restrictions that are placed on sales to private lands and except for private lands that are under permanent conservation easements. The agreement prompted many of our growers to bump their production. We have trees in the pipeline that are intended to meet the needs that will not be able to be met under current law with the agreement, that, which is in statute, by the way, that occurred in 2011. Senate File 57 goes back to some extent on that deal that was reached in 2011. If Senate File 57 does pass, we expect that some of our member nurseries will end up with excess stock that were intended to be sold into this market that will now be unlikely to be sold. We have, I had yesterday a grower who was intending to talk about her specific production numbers at Bailey Nurseries, which is a local St. Paul nursery, that were increased significantly by about a third in their seedling production in order to meet this demand. Most of those seedlings from Bailey's happen to be deciduous seedlings. And I know that many of the concerns at the Soil and Water Conservation Districts have been in evergreens. As you've heard, there are a number of container nurseries selling containerized evergreens, and we do have a couple of nurseries who are in production and who have bumped their numbers in barewood evergreens. We are not yet through the initial phases of the 2011 agreement. The availability issues are still not quite coming to a head, if in fact they exist. We would really prefer that Senate File 57 be set aside, that the agreement be allowed to work its way through, and that we actually see what kind of issues arise as a result of the change that came about in 2011. I'd be happy to answer any questions that the committee might have, but we would strongly urge you to set aside Senate File 57 at this time. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Power. Questions from the committee? Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Power. How long does it take for a tree to go from seed to the right size for bare root sale?
Mr. Chair and Senator Benson, it depends on what's being sold, but anywhere from 2 to 4 years. So we figure it's typically about a three-year production cycle on the bare root trees that I think that the SWCDs are most interested in.
Okay, and thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Power. This change went into place in 2011, session 2011.
That's correct.
And when were the seeds, so then based on a growing cycle, when were the seeds first realistically be able to be planted by these private businesses?
Mr. Chair and Senator Benson, many of the nurseries anticipated this change in 2011 and did some planting then. So the first of their three-year stock would be coming off in another year. As I understand it, the last cycle of planting from 2011 on the General Andrews Nursery, the State Forest Nursery, should be coming off this coming spring because they planted in 11 and they have the 11, 12, and 13 growing seasons in order to get to that point. So it's just the fact that we have a number of nurseries who have already begun production and we're going to end up with excess stock.
Thank you.
Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Power, so just to be clear, is it the anticipation of the industry and the nurseries that have begun this planting that they'll be able to supply the necessary bare root stock that's demanded by the SWCDs?
Mr. Chair and Senator Sieben, let me say that our private nurseries certainly have the capacity to provide everything that's needed. One of the reasons that the 2011 agreement was fortuitous for us was that seedling sales are down for everyone. And not only did the state forest nurseries have excess capacity, all of our private growers had excess capacity as well. All of the increases that have occurred in production in the last 2 years have been done with existing land, with existing practices, and basically within the same economies of scale. That could continue. And what the private nurseries do not have, and for that matter cannot have, is an overarching plan on how they collectively will provide all of these seedlings. We cannot do that because of antitrust rules, nor should we. And the point is we have the capacity, and our preferred mode going forward would be for either SWCDs or the DNR to enter into growing contracts with the private nurseries in order to come up with the stock from the appropriate seed source that is needed for those sales. So our stance here would be that we would prefer, if the state prefers to subsidize the sale of seedlings, and we would support that, we would recommend that the state subsidize the purchase of seedlings from the private sector rather than their production.
So just so I understand that the industry would prefer that you purchase the seedlings through individual SWCDs or on a statewide basis for all of them?
Mr. Chair and Senator Sieben, we are quite flexible in how we would like to make sure that we are able to sell into this market against the competition that we feel that the government is providing against private business here.
Mr. Chair, Senator
Saxon. Well, I think that it's fair to say that I'm back to invasive species here, and the fact that, again, we aren't talking about encapsulated roots. We're talking about bare roots. We're talking about the fact that there's nothing to keep other producers, other than the DNR nursery, from bringing in bare root stock from out of state. And invasive species we aren't planting an invasive species. It's things like emerald ash borer or spruce rust or these things that can come in that we don't have in the state right now, but they can come in. They just ride their way into the state on stock that's produced outside of the state. That's what we're really concerned with ultimately, is that if the production's not there, it just makes sense that that producers would go to out of state or out of country, in the case of Canada, and bring in more stock. And that's what we're concerned with, I think.
Senator Saxon, I understand that you wanted to use the Senate File 563 as the forestry bill, and you wanted to set these aside to consider into that bill?
Mr. Chair, I would appreciate, if this file, Senate File 57, be laid over for possible inclusion.
We'll just set it aside, and we'll get to that bill. So you wanted to take up the 1028 next?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, yes,
Mr. Chair.
Yes, I've got questions on this still yet. Yes, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I guess I just wish to make a statement here that in 2011, the legislature took action on which private business has made some long-term decisions. And I believe that at this point in time, for the legislature to pull the rug out from under those individuals who have made those decisions is grossly unfair. And if they are not able to meet the needs and the state nursery has excess stock, to me it seems that they're, and I don't know what percentage of stock, I guess, is being brought up. And I might ask, with your permission, Mr. Chair, Mr. Power, what percentage of stock would you say is actually coming in at, from outside the state right now?
Mr. Chair and Senator Weber, I cannot give you that information. I do not know it.
Okay.
I suspect that the DNR or may have some of those answers. We do not. Again, unfortunately, we are unable to operate as an overarching entity and give you hard numbers because of antitrust concerns.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Power, thank you. I understand that. I think, however, that certainly there may be ways even for the private nurseries and the state to even work together, and maybe in some respects. But I, as I mentioned, I truly believe it is unfair without having give them an adequate period of time to see if they can meet the needs. And I guess if it is the it's the intent to hold over 57 for inclusion, if I would like to make an oral amendment at this point to Senate File Number 57. Essentially removing line 1.13 and in line 1.14, the underlined words conservation projects. I think that the private sector, and I'd make that motion at this time.
well, except Senator, I guess we could deal with this now, and then whatever language we put together, we could hold over for the other bill. So, Senator Weber, under that, in other words, the only change would be we'd be changing from Bedora State Nursery to the state nurseries.
That would be correct, Mr. Chairman.
Let's vote it down.
But there would not be the sale allowed to soil and water conservation districts. Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, if I heard the motion correctly, to strike all the new language on
lines 13 and 14.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Saxog, want to speak to that?
Well, I think I would. I, with all due respect to Senator Weber, the decision that was made in 2011, we aren't talking necessarily about fairness here. We're talking about unwise forest policy. I don't think the policy was correct in 2011. That's what we're really talking about here. And, you know, I represent a huge part and have represented a huge part of the Big Woods. And we're sincerely worried about our nursery stock and our trees that get replanted up there, huge amounts. You know, that we aren't talking about the metropolitan area now or planting around cities. We're talking about an industry. And the industry that needs to be protected, and we need good production, and this is one of the corrections that we think that needs to be made to the 2011 bill.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Eaton,
thank you, Mr. Chair. I would echo what Senator Saxog says. I remember growing up when the Dutch elm disease devastated my community, and we were. It was pretty barren because, of course, we'd overplanted to single species, but I don't want to see that happen. We've been doing a pretty good job at keeping the ash borer at bay and other such diseases, and I just, as Mr. Senator Saxog said, I just think this was a misjudgment in 2011, that we really need this kind of protection to protect our forests and trees in Minnesota.
Weber moved to delete the new language in lines 13 and 14. More discussion. Senator Benson.
Mr. Chair, if we're concerned about emerald ash borer and other fungal invasive species, why not just limit the stock for sale in soil and water conservation districts to those grown in Minnesota? If that's the primary concern, then just limit the private stock grown to only grown in Minnesota for soil and water conservation districts, instead of setting up the state to compete directly with private businesses. The state has tremendous resources, and if this sale to soil and water conservation districts is to push money into another DNR program to protect forestry, then let's be upfront about that. If we need to protect forestry, then let's focus on that problem instead of competing with private business. So I've heard two things. One, we don't want invasive species, so let's just limit the stock to Minnesota grown. Number two, I've heard forestry is important and we need to protect that. So why don't we focus on that instead of taking away a market that would be available to a private entity?
Is that a question for me?
I would appreciate an answer, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Saxog.
I would say this, and thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Benson, that the private industry, the private nursery industry, does an excellent job in the state of Minnesota. It's a thriving industry. However, that part of it that is the nursery industry is the bare root industry. Has never been any type of a growth industry for them. You can say it's because of DNR competition, but it's really the DNR is doing it because there's not a lot of money. And I don't believe that there's, and again, back to 2011, I think the whole idea that this was in some way taking out of private industry a huge source of income, a huge way to make more money, or that they could do it more efficiently, is just not true. And this is an instance where I believe, and with bare root production, that the state of Minnesota and the government can do a better job than private industry. Most everything else, I would say, private industry does a better job. They've proved it.
Mr. Chair, and Senator Saxog. And perhaps the question better goes to Mr. Power. Do we know how many bare root plants are sold annually through the private market?
Mr. Chair and Senator Benson, I do not have a hard answer to that number, to that question. I do know that, unless I'm mistaken, the market for bare root seedlings to the SWCDs is in the third of a million total number. We are definitely prepared to meet that challenge, particularly if we have advance agreements with direct purchasers or with the DNR with regard to seed source, et cetera.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Power, who are the biggest private growers of bare root? You mentioned expansion, so who would be the biggest private growers?
Mr. Chair and Senator Benson, at this point, I believe that the largest grower for the evergreen market that the SWCDs are most interested in would be Schumacher's, a company down in Heron Lake, family-owned and for multiple generations, and they have ramped their production up significantly in bare root evergreens as well as deciduous stock in anticipation of the 2011 change.
Senator
Osmond. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Senator Saxog. I understand your concerns, but what we're witnessing here with the private sector is, for lack of a better term, a fledgling that is just beginning to grow. And it's an opportunity for us as the state to have a flourishing and growing private industry in this particular section. Changing now would stunt its growth. And one comment in regards to Senator Eaton, this is a very narrow-banded section where we could control invasive species. This has nothing to do with Home Depot, Menards, every other seller in Minnesota where invasive species can be introduced, and perhaps even on a more wide scale. I understand the concern about limiting the invasive species. However, with the volume and with the requirements that the state has or the conservation districts has on a large market, as it's been defined by the testifiers, a very limited market as far as what they're looking for in a very defined product, by contracting with the private sector, they can establish exactly the criteria by which they want their product. which is how the private sector reacts. The private sector will react to what you are requiring, and because I witness it every day within the private sector myself. Clients will come in, they will say, we want this. Now you build it and you provide an RFP, you respond to our RFP, providing your cost, your quality, and your ability to perform the function we are requiring. So I appreciate, Senator Saxhog, this legislation, but it is stunting the growth of something that really could grow to be something that's more efficient and at a lower cost to the taxpayer.
Further discuss, Mr. Thel.
Mr. Chair, Senator Osmak, we've been through this boat before. There was a series in about 1996. They had a roundtable discussion between the privates and the state, and they come up with a plan that they would cap the state at 10,000 trees. And they moved that direction, and by 2002 or 2003, they wound up they had to lift that cap because the privates never came up to the bat to supply those seedlings. So we were stymied for a number of years. And so then after a period of time when the market shrunk, that's where the sales went back to their kind of like their in that 6,000-7,000, a million per year in the, but the privates did not. So we've had this discussion back and forth. In the continuity of tree movement, it's better not to be trying to put these restrictions in place of how many or what. The benefit, again, is the district's work is going to be impediment if we can't have these reliable sources. And we shouldn't always be jumping back and forth. One session comes in and changes the rules, and we should have abided by that plan. It was working well up until 2011, and we've really done some modifications to the reforestation plans.
Mr. Chair.
Thank
you, Mr. Chair. This would go to Mr. Powers based on that comment. Now we're talking about the market and the growers 15 or 20 years ago based on their techniques, their quality standards, their knowledge of brer root, their knowledge of the forestry. 20 years ago, in the computer world, we were working with essentially stone knives and bear skins. I think we've advanced since then. Can you talk to advances that perhaps the nursery industry has gone forward in the next 20 years, as well as the market, and how they would bring this to market?
Mr. Chair, Powers. Senator Osmak, there certainly have been major changes in IT as well as in forestry seedling growing. I think the more important changes here have to do with the coordination that we would prefer to see set up so that we can sell well into this market to whomever, whether it be directly to the DNR, whether it be through SWCDs, or whether it be to private customers. Our growers stand ready to work with we love the concept of reforestation at as high a level as possible and would love to sell into that market, and have felt to some extent stymied by the DNR's ability to sell into this private market. And that's why we were so pleased with the 2011 change and why we built our capacity based on that. I know I'm not answering your question fully, but that's the best I can do at this point.
Further discussion, if not, on the Weber motion to delete the new language on lines 12 through 14. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No. No.
Motion, chairs in doubt. All those in favor, raise your hands. All those opposed? Chairs not in doubt. Motion does not prevail. We will lay the bill aside and deal with it when we get to the Senate file 563. Senator Saxhog, Senate file 1028, school forest establishment.
Mr. Chair, I apologize for that. It was a good discussion, but I didn't realize it was going to be that long.
It's okay. debate takes as long as it takes always. Welcome back for 1028.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 1028, I have the A1 author's amendment. I'd like...
Senator Hoffman moves the A... What amendment? A1 amendment. We'll get that distributed. Why don't you start speaking to the bill while we...
Yeah, Senate File 1028, Mr. Chair, and members, makes changes to school forests in Minnesota. And with me today is Forrest Bowe from the DNR to give brief testimony. Forrest, as you know, is in charge of the...
Mr. Bowe, welcome to the
Commissioner
committee.
Commissioner Forrest, as we call him.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. Again, for the record, Forrest Bowe, Director of Forestry in Minnesota DNR. What we have in front of us today is... A bill that would allow school forests to be established on tax forfeit land conveyed by the county, and this would also allow us to maintain our 46 school forests that already exist on tax forfeited land. We have about 120 school forests total. If the amendment is passed out, I'll briefly take us through the sections of the bill.
Yes.
Section 1 makes a couple of changes to Chapter 90, which is really the school forest chapter. This change in Section 1 allows school forests to be established without paying fair market value for these tax forfeit lands. As you look down in the bill, Subdivision 3 also has a monitoring clause. And this is really no additional work for us because we currently monitor all of our school forests today. Section 2 of the bill changes a portion of Chapter 282, Minnesota Statute Chapter 282. It allows the counties to convey tax forfeit land for less than market value for school forest purposes. Section 3 of the bill is a reverter, basically in Chapter 282, and this would provide an exemption, and this is where the amendment is attached. So this would provide an exception for tax forfeit land conveyed to establish a school forest. Essentially what this does is that tax forfeit land after 30 years would become free and clear title to whoever that tax forfeit land was conveyed to. That group would then be able to sell that land, and under this new section here, it would revert back to that tax authority rather than be sold off.
Senator Hoffman moves the A1 author's amendment. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. On the bill, any questions? Senator Saxon.
So, Mr. Chair, I appreciate that someone moved that Senator File 1028 has amended to be recommended to pass and
any possible inclusion. Yeah, if we're going to include it, we will just set the bill aside as amended. And
fine.
And then you can move to the DNR Senate file. We will set that one aside as well in Senate file 563.
And thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Today I'm presenting 563. I have an A1 delete all. I'd like to move that at this time.
Delete everything. Amendment will be distributed and... while it's being distributed, maybe you just want to start explaining.
Sure. Well,
or do we want to have it in front of us? Is there enough changes?
This is the annual DNR forestry bill, and some of you may have heard me say over the years I beat the drum pretty hard. This is the fourth largest industry in the state, the wood products industry. It generates over $10 billion in revenue, and it's important that we take good care of our forests. And with me today is... out of the Division of Forestry is Forrest Bowe, who gave the last testimony, and he's going to talk about the A1 amendment or the delete all amendment in the forestry bill.
Go ahead, Mr. Bowe.
Again, Mr. Chair, members, there are three components to the forestry bill. I'll give you a brief overview first. Section 1 is with regard to exchange of road easements. This allows us to complete a more efficient and cost-effective exchange of access easements with private and other government landowners. Essentially, it says when the roads are about the same length, they probably have about the same value, and it allows us to trade with those parties if they are deemed substantially equal value. This has some cost-saving benefits for us. It allows us to not go through lengthy appraisal processes, those kinds of things, and will certainly speed up our work in when we need to cross land and other landowners need to cross our land. Essentially, it's a trade, an agreement, or an exchange. Section 2 of the bill is a really a bookkeeping item. It has to do with the Forest Management Investment Account. It allows us to manage our cash flow a little bit better. Currently, we do a cost certification, garner money from that account annually. This would allow us to do that on a quarterly basis. Section 3 of the bill is with regard to Chapter 90 revisions. This is the chapter that governs our state timber sales program. Will improve the business practices and financial practices of how we administer that program, a little more flexibility in how we market our timber, and it increases efficiency in the administration of our timber sales. There's a significant amount of changes. The majority of these are technical in nature. Just a few highlights. We changed the terms to reflect some current products. We changed the time period and restrictions on the ability to sell some permits, especially the over-the-counter permits. We increased our ability to let improvement contracts. We update some provisions on debarment when there's been a successful conviction and several other business needs. And I would go through each section of the bill if the chair or members so choose.
I will suggest, unless members do want any particular questions, we leave it at that. Are there, and is, you have one more witness or person with concerns about the bill, perhaps, who wish to testify, Mr. Higgins? And while he's coming up, are there questions for Mr. Bow right now? Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senators. I'm Ray Higgins. I'm Director of Operations for Minnesota Forest Industries and the Minnesota Timber Producers Association. Minnesota Timber Producers Association is a trade organization representing loggers, truckers, sawmills, allied businesses in our state. MFI represents the primary forest products companies in our state, folks that make the paper products, engineered wood products, lumber mills, forest landowners, and producers of renewable energy from forest biomass. We do support Senate File 563. I'd like to thank the DNR for making these changes and making these adjustments, many of which are responsive to our members' concerns and making every effort to make it easier for them to conduct business in our state, particularly at a time that we've had in the last 4 or 5 years in our state when the forest products industry is at its share of challenges. One provision of the bill I wanted to mention, it highlights the deals with the conditions that exist due to the explosion and fire at the Verso paper mill in Sartell last Memorial Day. You know, some of our members purchased balsam fir permits from the DNR specifically to market and haul that wood to Verso, and they purchased these state permits in good faith. No one could have foreseen the events of last Memorial Day weekend, and the amendment or the provision in the bill potentially provides those loggers with relief. It gives them a window of opportunity that we've seen some folks with balsam permits that were planning on selling to Verso that then were able to find other markets and were able to sell that wood in other places, and that's certainly the goal of any of our members and any business owner. But the window gives, or the permit or the legislation gives those folks an additional window of time to further market that permit. And if they can't market the wood, then they're provided some relief from those unforeseen circumstances. You know, it could mean tens of thousands of dollars to the good for our members, which, of course, would help them conduct their business and stay in business. So we support the file 563 and appreciate the DNR's work on this important legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. And that provision you were speaking to is Section 43?
I believe that's right. Is that correct? Yep.
Is there questions from the committee? Is there anybody in the audience who wish to speak with concerns about the bill? If not, Senator Hoffman moves the A1 amendment to put the bill in the shape the author explained he didn't want it. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Saxon, you wanted to ask that these previous bills that we took up be considered as amendments to this. Senator Hoffman moves Senate file 1028 language as amended as an amendment to Senate file 563. Is there a discussion on that motion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Hoffman also moves Senate file 57.
Mr. Chair, one moment,
Senator
please.
Benson.
Pull my Senate file 57. One of the primary concerns seemed to be for coniferous stock, and Mr. Chair, I would move to amend on line 1.13, insert after the word sale the words of coniferous stock, and then continue with two soil and water conservation districts.
Senator Benson, could you repeat that? I missed some of the words you were saying.
I apologize, Mr. Chair, if I didn't speak clearly. On line 1.13, after the word sale, insert of coniferous stock.
The amendment, Senator Benson's amendment, would read for sale of coniferous stock to soil and water conservation districts, et cetera.
Yes, Mr. Chair, that appears to address a shortage issue expressed by the soil and water conservation districts.
Senator Saxog.
Mr. Chair and Senator, so we're talking about evergreens.
Yes.
Could be sold to the soil and water.
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's what it would mean. But the deciduous stock that, you know, we have millions of seedlings being planted. So if there really is a shortage to the soil and water conservation districts, this would allow the state nurseries to fill that shortage for the coniferous stock that seemed to be the shortage they were most concerned about.
Senator Saxon.
You know, at this point, I think I would accept that as a friendly amendment.
Senator Saxog moves, Senator Benson moves to add of coniferous stock after the word sale on line 13. Senator Sieben.
Excuse me, I have a cold. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Saxog, then could you just assure us that if that's the case, that it would, that the issue of that was brought up regarding invasive species would be, because it doesn't seem like Senator Benson's amendment addresses whether it's coniferous stock sold outside of Minnesota, whether there is really a threat of
Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, Senator Benson, how would you answer that question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Saxhog, and Senator Sieben. What we're doing is allowing the state nursery that is growing coniferous stock within the state of Minnesota to sell coniferous trees to the Soil and Water Conservation District. So for the coniferous, the invasive species would not apply, and we keep going back to this invasive species issue. Our Soil and Water Conservation Districts can make stock choices that will limit, restrict, prohibit invasive species in the state.
Senator Saxon?
Did that answer your question, Senator Sieben? Okay.
Mr. Bowe, do you want to speak to this?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I certainly don't want to speak for the SWCDs, but what I can tell you is that over the past 4 years in sales to SWCDs, we've averaged about 250,000 seedlings that the department sells to them. I don't have the statistics in front of me, but I believe the majority of those are deciduous stock. We sell about between 5.5 and 6 million seedlings per year from state nurseries. The law enacted in 2011 allows us to plant and stock for research and use on public lands and also private lands that have permanent conservation easements on them.
Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then this amendment then would limit you to the coniferous stock. Am I understanding that right? If you wanted to sell something else according to this bill, you would not be able to the Soil and Water Conservation Districts.
Mr. Bow.
Mr. Chair, Senator Scalzi, that's as I read the suggested amendment, that would be accurate.
Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then would that inhibit the planting of the trees these are private businesses that need these trees planted for future forestry uses. So would that inhibit the future reforestation that we need for our private forestry businesses?
Mr. Chair, Senator Scalzi, this would just allow the DNR to sell only certain species to the SWCDs. The SWCDs would then, I presume, package and purchase seedlings from other sources.
Mr. Chair?
Senator
Sachs. I appreciate the thoughtful discussion on both sides. I think this is not the last stop of the bill, and I think we've brought up some good points that probably need some further research. So I would accept the amendment, and then if somebody would move the Senate File 563 as amended, including Senate File 57 as amended, and Senate File 1028 as amended, and moving on to the Finance Committee, that would be terrific.
Senator Hoffman has moved the bill as it was, and Senator Benson offered her amendment, and we will deal with her amendment first and then the amendment to the amendment overall. On the Benson motion to add the words of coniferous stock on line 13, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Chairs in doubt. All those in favor, raise your hand. Motion prevails. On the motion, the Hoffman motion as amended, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Aye. Motion prevails. On the bill as a whole now with all three parts in it, further discussion? Not all those in, Senator, this bill goes to Finance, is next up? Okay. Senator Hoffman moves that Senate File 563 as amended be recommended pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Saxo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Appreciate it.
Senator Scalzi. Welcome to the committee, Senate File 725.
Do I need to move that first?
You may move. Senator Scalzi moves that Senate File 725 be recommended to pass, and I don't think this goes to any other committees. Go ahead and present the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 725 is an enabling piece of legislation. It's not a state mandate. It's related to soil and water conservation districts whose elected boards may want to voluntarily consolidate to move together. So there's no state mandate, and both would have to agree. Both the state and the soil and water conservation districts would have to agree. And it moves the process from a referendum, public referendum, which is costly, to a petition. And it's a way of streamlining government if those soil and water conservation districts would so choose to do that. It would require fewer staff and financial resources. So, plus the public input is still maintained. So here to speak on both of both speakers here, John Jasky, Board of Water and Soil Resources, and Sheila Vanney, who's the Assistant Director of the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts.
Welcome to the committee. Go ahead.
Chairman John Jasky, Director of Board of Water and Soil Resources, and as Senator Scalzi mentioned, this piece of legislation was actually brought to our agency by the Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. They've been working not only among themselves, but also under the banner of the Local Government Water Roundtable with counties and watershed districts over the last several years, and have last year passed some policy language related to watershed management. This bill is specific to soil and water conservation districts, as Senator Scalzi mentioned. As she said, this allows the conjoinment of two or more soil and water conservation districts where they see benefit in doing that. The legislation is needed to allow that process to happen without going through this referendum process, which, as she said, takes a good bit of time and effort and money in some cases. The process would still have checks and balances. It would allow the local board to do this as a vote of their current elected officials. So there would have to be, you know, both or more than two, I guess, could also conjoin. But if two were to conjoin, it would take both of the elected boards to agree to do that. It would also take a petition process then to the state, to the Board of Water and Soil Resources, to ultimately review and enact that if it was going to be viable and beneficial for the citizens and also for the soil and water conservation statutory requirements and opportunities that are in that entire body of law in 103C. It also, one little provision that was important was that to include is on page 3 on line 3.13 that if this conjoinment for some reason isn't working out, there would be a process to undo it, so to speak, after a two-year period. So we want to make sure they had the opportunity to try it, but if that wasn't going to work out, they could undo that conjoinment and go back to the way it was before that conjoinment occurred. So, Mr. Chairman, members, that's really the bill. It sets up a process to conjoin two or more SWCDs where they want to do it, and the state has a process to validate it, and there is this option, if necessary, to undo it within or after a two-year period.
Thank you, Mr. Jasky. Ms. Vanney?
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Sheila Vanney. I'm the Assistant Director of the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. Our association has worked with the governor's administration through the Board of Water and Soil Resources to set forth these proposed changes in the hopes of removing potential barriers and burdensome procedures faced by SWCDs who may want to mutually and voluntarily endeavor to consolidate their governance and services. In April of 2012, the Office of the Legislative Auditor released an evaluation report on the consolidation of local government. While the report was limited in scope to counties, cities, and towns, some of the findings in the report also ring true for SWCDs. The report starts off with a letter from Legislative Auditor Jim Nobles to members of the Legislative Audit Commission, where Mr. Nobles states, "Every level of government must be open to reform, particularly when a reform might result in cost savings or improved service delivery." He goes on to state that they found local government officials are often open to considering consolidation proposals, but view its implementation as potentially complex, costly, and controversial. They also voiced a strong desire to manage consolidation and collaboration efforts themselves and not to have them mandated by the state. Senate File 725 reflects the interest of our association to simplify the process of SWCD consolidation, make it less costly, and maintain consolidation as a process that is not mandated by the state, but instead is maintained as a process that is only entered upon by SWCDs who mutually and voluntarily express their interest to do so. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Questions from either witness. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Fanny, have you been able to figure out the cost savings on this at all? I mean, I'm sure it's hard to figure out who's going to consolidate and what's going to happen, but did you talk about the potential cost savings on this?
Mr. Chair, Senator Rosen, we have not tabulated exact figures of the costs of a referendum versus the costs of a petition process through the Board of Water and Soil Resources. There is not a lot of history of SWCD referendums in the recent past, so we'd be dealing with some pretty old figures, but I could certainly work to find some cost figures for you.
Further discussion. Senator Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Senator Scalzi. This process effectively takes away the voters' right to decide on this. So I have a couple of questions. Is there a hearing requirement in this petition process where each of the boards that may, let's say it's two boards that are going to consolidate, is there a hearing process that they have to go through to make it publicly known to their constituency that this is taking place?
Mr. Chair, and I will just briefly answer that. Thank you, Senator Osmond. The public would submit written comments and could request a hearing, but I would defer to Ms. Fanny for further comment.
Mr. Chair, Senator Osmond, the opportunities for public notice and public input are, I believe, starting on line 2.20. Upon the filing of a petition, there needs to be public notice. And then the opportunity for public input, and if there are members of the public who contest, there's a public hearing that is triggered.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifiers. I would suggest, and I'm not sure if I really want to make a motion, I'll float it past Senator Scalzi, the addition of after line 3.16, that you would add an addition of a designation of I and allow for a reverse referendum within 30 days of the hearing that takes place with the required petition of the water of the board that's taking action. I say this because you're taking away the voting privileges from residents, and if for some reason you have a water or a board that goes off the rails and starts and the people don't want to be consolidated, I think you need to have some trigger that stops the process by a petition of the district itself. It creates a balance where if the voters don't believe this is the right thing to do, that they still have their voice. I don't know if you would consider that as an amendment.
Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I would have to defer to the representation from the Soil and Water Conservation District. I know where you're heading with that. So I'm just wondering, that was a pretty lengthy amendment, and I don't know if I understood what it would be. You're inserting another letter I with language that may be in state law in other places, is what I'm understanding.
Mr. Chair, Senator Scalzi, no, I don't think it's necessarily in state law. This is more consistent with other reverse other processes that have reverse referendums attached to them, where if for some reason the board isn't doing something and you're taking away with this action the ability to have the voters vote on the because right now you have to have a referendum to make the consolidation, that you would at least give back to the voters the ability with a certain standard such as 5% or 10% or 15% of the jurisdiction voters that exist, the ability for them to stop this process if they felt it was wrong, and they would have to, within 30 days, so it's not a long time, within 30 days they would have to come up with this petition. I think this is actually rather far-fetched, but it still does provide an allowance for the voters to stop a runaway process if they feel it's wrong.
Yeah, Senator Skelly, in other words, he's saying that if they move to consolidate and say 10% of the voters petition, they could have a reverse referendum done to it.
Mr. Chairman, the idea, I think, has merit. I think the way the language would read would be something that we'd have to have staff and council work on, perhaps. But it's probably close to the language that's being stricken up on the beginning of the document on page, line 1.10 through 1.16, something like that. I think Senator Osmick is saying preserves that, like you say, very unlikely circumstance, but provides that reverse referendum in a short period of time that someone really thinks there's a problem that needs to be fixed.
Mr. Chair, that's exactly what I'm talking about, is that I don't think I'll make an amendment today. However, I know that this probably has additional stops that you may want to do that to preserve the right of the residents to be able to slow down a process if they feel it's wrong. And like you said, I don't think that you're going to find that, but there are once in a while situations where it may apply.
And this is the next stop, is the floor, and I don't usually like to send things there that aren't quite ready, and I know Senate Council could get amended fairly quickly, but I think I agree with your thing that there should be some threshold if 10% of the voters feel this is a real problem, then they have a chance to do it. So, but if you're not going to offer something now, then maybe you and Senator Scalzi and the folks can talk about before the floor. Unless you want to try and do it now, I mean, I don't know. Senator Scalzi, you have a preference one way or another?
No, I don't. It would be helpful, though, if there is, thank you, Mr. Chair, if there is language that has been determined by Senate Council, and I'm not sure if that's happening right now, or if Senate Council would prefer to wait, we could meet and agree to something before it goes to the floor.
And I don't know that this would be a highly controversial thing on the floor if you can work something out. Would you have some language that would be close?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Scalzi, the one issue is what is the percentage? Is it 10% of the residents of the districts? Because if you're merging two districts, I assume you want to have people from both, or would it be just of one of the districts?
Mr. Chair and to Mr. Knopf, I think you do need to have either a defined number or a defined percentage of the newly created district that is actually agreeing to it so that both sides agree to it. The language that's in lines, as it's been mentioned, in 1.10 through 1.12 may satisfy the situation by just adding that as an I and putting in 5% of the residents of the combined new district. But I agree that I think Senator Scalzi can, and if she wants my advice on it, I think she certainly can. We could work on that before it gets to the floor.
I think when I was hearing Senate Council mention, it's possible that people in one of the two existing ones don't want to merge and the other one doesn't mind. So I think it might be something if the two of you can do some talking before the floor. I guess I'll just recommend that if you're both comfortable with that. Okay. Are there any other discussions? Is there anybody in the audience who wish to speak with concerns about the bill? If not, Senator Scalzi moves that Senate File 725 be recommended pass and be recommended pass. On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. And I think you actually may be able to talk with Senate Council later, well, early next week or so.
We're in the same committee 4 days a week.
So. Yeah.
You don't have much choice.
She's the same inmate that I am.
Next up, we have Senator Marty with Bob Meyer from the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources introducing Senate File 889. Senator Marty, welcome to your committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill, actually, the DNR policy bill, came through the Game and Fish and Wildlife Subcommittee, and I don't know if we made amendments there. I have, since that time, have heard from a number of people, and the House has taken out Section 11 of it. Section 2 and Section 11, Section 2 is one on, Section 2 on OHV criminal penalties. Apparently there's been some controversy over both of those two, and we decided we'd rather pull them for this time. So, Mr. Chair, Senate Council, do I have to
Senator move
the subcommittee report, or there wasn't a subcommittee report in effect?
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't know if there was one. There were no amendments made to the bill, so it's clean.
So we don't need to. You're right. So, Mr. Chair, I
Senator
will
Marty.
Move in Senate file, this is 889, that we delete sections 2 and 11.
Senator Marty moves that we delete those as noted. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. I oppose, same sign. Senator Marty.
I'm told we just saved ourselves going to Judiciary Committee from criminal penalty.
Very smart.
And Mr. Chairman, the bill is several things, mainly how, well, some are technical too. Section 1 is just compliance with federal law. Commissioner can promulgate policy through orders for ADA compliance rather than through rule. Section 2 we deleted. Sections 3 through 5 would go back somewhat to the way we had it, where we used to have snowmobile, where you get a 3-year license, and you could also buy separately a trail permit. Several years ago, we merged the two into one permit for the higher price, and now I know several colleagues have expressed concern that there are lots of people who never ride on the state trails, and I think there's dispute among snowmobilers on which it is, but this would allow snowmobilers to purchase it for non-trail use only for the lower fee. The Section 6 is the Matthew Laurie State Trail would just be continuing 5 miles further south. The Section 7 was to allow somebody to enter the LaSalle Lake State Recreation Area. They wouldn't need a park permit unless they were in the day use or the campground area. They would not need it to be in the wildlife management area. Section 8 is a technical fee detail related to, I don't know, Mr. Meyer can explain further if somebody has questions about it. Section 9 is just allowing a $2 duplicate ski pass if the original is lost. That's been in rule. We're just putting it in statute. Sections 10 and 12 are fairly technical about rulemaking authority there. I can have Mr. Meyer speak to that if people have questions. 11 we deleted, and Section 13 is if you have a paddle board, you don't need to display the boat license numbers on it. If it's over, I don't know, 9 feet or 14 feet, 9 feet, you have to be licensed, but you don't need to display the numbers like on a lot of, I think, canoes don't require the numbers either. Be happy to stand for questions, and I understand there were a couple other amendments related to rules the department was working on.
Senator Dibble.
Well, I'm ready to offer an amendment unless folks want to ask about the bill
Dibble.
Itself.
Senator Marty, any discussion?
I don't think there's much of controversy left in the bill. Senator Hoffman.
Senator Marty, thank you. I would just like to offer just for us to take a look on 5.5 on page 5. Senator Marty, as we look at inclusion of certain characteristics in individuals, disabled persons, I would like to start to see us use people first language, which is a person with a disability. As we look at that, would you be open to?
Mr. Chairman, I'll move that we strike disabled persons and. We've changed. I think that this is being done in other bills where it's being gone throughout everything. I don't mind doing it here. I think it's purely, it's new terminology. We've given revisor instruction to do that. This may be caught anyway, but I'll move that. I will move that we strike this for disabled persons, right? Persons with disabilities.
Mr. Chair, Senator Marty, I think you want to leave the four. The way I would do this is to strike disabled and after persons insert with a disability.
I'll move that.
Thank you, Mr. Senator Marty, Mr. Knopf. At the amendments there is all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you, Senator Marty.
And I know Senator Dibble and I don't know if Senator Eaton has amendments related to rulemaking process that went, and maybe they can present them and explain them. And
thanks, Mr. Chair, for the A1 amendment.
Senator Dibble chooses the A1 amendment.
So, Mr. Chair and members, what this would allow is that a rulemaking process that was nearing completion, having to do with the Mississippi River critical area, as a function of direction given by the state legislature, a law passed by the state legislature with the support of the then governor. A process was undertaken to update the Mississippi River critical area, River Corridor critical area DNR rules. And there was an update to some of the existing critical area rules and a lengthy 18-month process standard rulemaking process was undertaken. The then commissioner missed a deadline to publish the notice of intent, and then the authority then to continue with the process expired. And so all of that work then just fell by the wayside. And so there's this technical bureaucratic snafu, and so it's a simple language that allows that process to continue for just a tiny bit longer so that these rules can be completed and enacted.
And Mr. Senator Chair, Marty. I had heard from people who had spoken with Senator Dibble as well, and that is that I don't know what it is, whether it's 18 months. You have to file the notice of intent to adopt by a certain date, and they failed to do that. I understand the rulemaking was almost complete. And I don't know if there was somebody in the room who wanted to speak to it or not. This is Mississippi River critical areas area.
Critical area. It has to do with recognizing the Mississippi River is a critical area. Recognizes state park from Ramsey down to Hastings, and just some of the guidance for development and dealing with all the issues that you deal with along the shore of the Mississippi.
Senator Dibble, that's Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, yeah, I'd support the amendment. I think this, that, and the next one were both areas where they went through the rulemaking process, but didn't, I guess in this one at least, it was the issue of failing to file the notice within the 2-year, in which case, unless we do this retroactively, all their work on the rules is gone and they'd have to start over. We'd have to give them renewed stuff instead of just letting them finish what they missed the deadline.
Yes, thank Mr. Chair. Thank you,
Senator
Dibble. Yeah, thank you for making that final point about the effective date.
Having said that, the language that addresses that 72-mile stretch and is in front of us, and all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you. Senator Marty.
I have nothing else, but I think there was a similar one, the shoreline standards rule thing. And I don't remember if somebody wanted to.
Senator Marty, Senator Eaton has one added as well.
I have, Mr. Chair, I have the A2 amendment. And I also have a letter for the committee.
Senator Eaton has the A2 amendment. Senator Marty, that's being passed out right now. Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment kind of it ties into what Senator Dibble was talking about. This is basically the appropriations that ended because of the same failure to meet the deadline and to continue this project. It's too quick. I have a letter for the committee also.
Senator Eaton, go ahead.
I have some people who would like to speak to it, if that's acceptable.
Senator Marty agrees. So, Senator Eaton.
Mr. Chair, I don't have control over you.
All right. So,
I'm looking for Lance. Lance Ness, please.
Welcome to the committee. For the record, please state your full name and where you're from.
Good morning, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Lance Ness. I'm the president of the Fish and Wildlife Legislative Alliance and also president of Anglers for Habitat. You'll see that many of our members have signed on the letter. I'm from Golden Valley, Minnesota.
Mr. Ness, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We support the amendment. This is a long time overdue. Some of my members have participated in this stakeholder process, up to 3 years, and they are anxious to see this finally resolved. And it just died because, again, it didn't meet a deadline. But a lot of work has gone into this, and for those reasons and many others, it's about time to update the laws about shoreline regulations. And I'll just give you a quick example, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm just old enough to remember when you get an old boat, you take a rope and wrap it around the motor, and you have to pull it, and the gas tank was somehow attached to the motor. Nowadays, you get into a boat, and you turn a key, and 200 twin-horsepower motors kick on, and it's gone a long ways. And where we store these things, where we put them, and where we play with them, they're very important to all the people that own Lakeshore and the waters of Minnesota. So that'll end my testimony, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Ness. Senator Eaton, did you have anybody else that wanted to come as well?
I have Gary Botzik from the Minnesota Conservation Federation.
Mr. Botzik, welcome to the committee. Please state your full name and where you're from.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Gary Botzik, Executive Director of the Minnesota Conservation Federation. You see my name on that letter as well from in support of this amendment. Again, the clock ran out, 18 months of hard work, as Mr. Ness alluded to. I know there's some concerns by the counties, and I think they're coming up next, but this is a process, this is a product that needs to move forward. Our lakes, I used to represent the Minnesota Lakes Association. Minnesota Lakes Association is gone. The lakes are not. The lakes are still there. They're under major duress. Many of you represent numerous lakes in your districts, whether they're urban or outstate lakes. I'm chairing an AIS advisory committee now for the DNR, and COLAs and lake associations are participating. They're looking for tools. They're looking for funding. They're looking for partners, and these rules will help provide or further define some of those tools in that toolbox that will help local governments deal with these problems. We also, the big thing that's changed since these rules were started is funding. We worked very hard for the dedicated sales tax money. Now with the Lasard-Sams money as well as the clean water money, clean action funds, some of these monies can be used to help local governments in the future as they deal with lake and lake shore problems. So we urge you to support this amendment and work on funding in the next funding committee.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Botzik. The A2 amendment, any questions regarding? Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Meyer pointed out that for both this one and the other one, it would be in the notwithstanding language. We should also add notwithstanding 14.128.
Mr. Knapp.
Or maybe Mr. Meyer wants to explain what. He's got the section open.
Senator Marty. Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, members, this was language that we've had in
similar rulemaking provisions, and this deals with the effective date for rules requiring local implementation. Basically, what that would require us to do is to make a determination. It says an agency must determine if a local government will be required to adopt or amend an ordinance or other regulation to comply with the proposed agency rule. These rules are being updated across the board, so the local governments will need to update their rules to comply with the standard. So just if we could not withstand this section, we would not need to do that piece, include that within the documentation in the SONAR.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Senator Weber has a question.
No, I'm sorry.
It was for Barb. Yeah. That's all right. Senator Weber does not have a question.
I would accept that as a friendly amendment.
Thank you. Senator Eaton accepts that as a friendly amendment.
Why don't we just incorporate that into her amendment?
Okay, great. We will incorporate it into...
I guess after 14.125 and section 14.128.
So, Mr. Knopf, you want to repeat what we just...
Mr. Chair, members, I think the best way to do that would be to, on line 2.9, delete section and insert sections, and after 14.125, insert and 14.128. And, Mr. Chair, I think what Mr. Meyer mentioned, too, is we may want to go back to the Dibble Amendment and amend that to do the same thing.
Thank you, Mr. Knopf. Senator Dibble.
That's Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry.
Do we need to vote on those separately? All right.
Yep. All right. So the A2 amendment as has changed and amended is in front of us. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. It passes. Now can we take up the Senator Dibble's?
Thanks.
Senator Dibble.
Sure. So do we need to reoffer the amendment, or can we just...
Move to amend.
I'll just move the same language in the spot on line 1.6 of the A1 amendment.
Senator Dibble moves the same language. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Opposed, same sign. Thank you. Motion passes. Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to emphasize that these rules have been in place for like 22 years. And they're just minimum standards, and we're trying to update them to modern times, as was addressed. And what am I trying to say? And so I encourage you to allow the department to do that.
Thank you, Senator Eaton. Senator, the A2 amendment was passed upon, and with the changes, Senator Weber has an A3 amendment that, are you ready to present that, Senator
Yes, Mr.
Weber?
Chairman, thank
All right,
you.
Thank you. Members, the A3 amendment will be coming around soon. And as soon as Senator Weber, do you want to give us a little background on A3 amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I think and I hope that the author of the bill will consider this a friendly amendment. Essentially, the purpose of it is, and you'll see the proposed changes there, essentially the purpose of it is to allow all those military personnel, including our guardsmen, who are qualified to have in their possession the annual pass for U.S. military and their dependents issued by the federal government, access to all of our state parks. Currently, that pass gives them access to all the federal parks, but not to the state parks. And this would be granting them that same type of privilege.
Senator Weber has the A3 amendment. Bob Meyer or Mr. Meyer or Senator Marty, any questions?
Mr. Chairman, I...
Senator Marty.
I don't have any objection to it. It probably has a small fiscal impact. I assume fairly small, but I don't know. Mr. Meyer was saying he thinks that this is already allowed in many cases, but in which case it wouldn't have a fiscal.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Meyer.
Members, we do a lot of things for our veterans. We're very appreciative of everything that they do for us, obviously. And on our website, we have a whole list of the things that are included there. And I was trying to find the actual citation, but right now a free one-day Minnesota State Park vehicle permit is available to military personnel on leave and those visiting within 90 days of leaving active service. We can look at this. Certainly, I think we can make it work. I just need to review the language and work with the author. There might be some tweaks we need to do in this or other places. So,
thank you. Mr. Meyer, Mr. Knopf just said it's going to be going to Finance Committee, but Senator Weber has a follow-up. Senator Weber?
Yeah, it's my understanding. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's my understanding that there is obviously the provision that Mr. Meyer talked about, but there is also a discount available, but nothing that gives them this type of access. So,
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, members, we will support this. There's some technical things we'll have to work through.
I understand.
And we might want to say a free permit so we know that that veteran or that person who's there has come in and gotten we'll probably issue them a free tag for the day or something. So
right. And
we'll work with the author and figure out how to make this one.
And Mr. Chairman and Mr. Meyer, it's my understanding that the availability of these U.S. passes, military passes, are available at various sites around the state. And so, you know, if we can piggyback on that, it probably would eliminate some additional requirements on the part of the DNR, too.
Mr. Chair, members, we just want to make sure that we aren't requiring a person to put, you know, their military ID or something we need to be very – we'll develop something that makes this work. So,
Mr. Meyer, it has just brought to my attention from Mr. Knopf that it's a specific pass. So, Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, I think there's questions of how it all fits together and works with it, but I don't have any objection to the amendment. I just want to make sure it does fit together right.
So, Senator Marty, Mr. Meyer, if it fits within Senator Weber, you're going to work together on getting it to the next stop. Is that what I hear?
All right. Thank you.
So the A3 amendment's in front of folks. Any other questions regarding A3? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion is moved. We have one more person that wants to testify on this bill, Mr. Marty. It's Anna Lee Garlett, Association of Minnesota Counties, can you please state your name and record? And we got to do this in less than a minute, and I'm going to hold you under that, okay?
I will try.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Anna Lee Garlitz, and I'm with the Association of Minnesota Counties. I just wanted to get on the record that AMC is not in support of the A2 amendment that was adopted. Right now, counties are required to have shoreland ordinances, and in many cases, counties are more restrictive. We feel that opening up the rules will just create more enforcement and administration and thereby more cost to counties if we have to redo the rules. We would be supportive if we knew exactly what the DNR was going to open them up to do, if we could have an agreement, if the DNR could supply us with scientific evidence of how the environment would benefit if we changed the rules. But opening up the rules to open up the rules is not something counties are in support of at this time. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. It's my understanding this is going to be moving on to state and local government, so perhaps you can bring that up, get yourself on the docket to testify there. Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, we've been working with AMC for several months, actually since the summertime, talking about our desire to update these shoreland rules, and it's our intention that the guidelines or the updated rules will be guided by the following principles: better protection for riparian areas and water quality, improve ease of administration for both the local government units and the DNR, take advantage of restoration opportunities through redevelopment, consider information and stakeholder concerns from recent rulemaking process, and continued stakeholder involvement as we move forward on both of these rule sets. So we'll be working very closely with all the stakeholders to try to address their concerns.
I'm happy to hear that, Mr. Meyer. Thank you. Members, before you, is Senate File 889. As amended, Senator Herr moves the Senator Marty, you want to move this as amended? Thank you. Senator Marty moves as amended. All those in favor signify by to state and local government. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Moves. Thank you so much. Senator Marty, Senate File 510, a continuation. It looks like we got about a half hour of time, a continuation of what we started a week ago. Is that correct, Senator Marty?
Not quite a week ago, Mr. Chair.
Feels like it after last night. So,
Mr. Chair, members, we were in the midst of testimony on this bill, and I know that there's been some discussions between the cities and the haulers and so on, and so maybe It's before we call up any other witnesses, just here, because I don't know, they've been talking among each other all day, so I'll let Mr. Johnson tell me what they've been talking about and discuss it from there.
Senator Marty, thank you. Mr. Johnson, welcome back. I have members, what's being presented to you is what was handed out at the last meeting, which was the A2 amendment. So as that's handed out.
That's just, Mr. Chair, so we know what the shape of the bill was when we left it, because
yes,
I think it may actually be in the packets. I didn't see it earlier, but I think it was in there.
Senator Marty, thank you for the reminder. This was adopted at the last meeting. So,
yes.
Senator Marty, with you is Mr. Johnson from the League of Minnesota Cities.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. And, yes, you may have seen a number of folks related to this issue buzzing around the halls in the room this morning. We've actually been working fairly hard to look at some of the comments that were made and questions that were asked at the last committee meeting and to get some of those brought forward. We actually will have some language in an amendment that I think you'll be able to take a look at today that deals with some of the concerns that the small private haulers were bringing forward at the last hearing, really addressing the fact that it's a transition period from when you're going from an open, you get to knock on doors and hand out coupons system to an organized collection system. How can we kind of build at least an opportunity for a transition there? I'll let them speak to that when the amendment comes up, Mr. Chair, but just wanted to let folks know that we do have some language that the city and township interests that are working on this are comfortable with to address some of those concerns.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, maybe while they're preparing their language for consideration, maybe we should have witnesses who wanted to speak to it. I think the witnesses who were here last couple of days ago who didn't get a chance to speak were from small haulers. The ones listed on today's agenda seem to be larger haulers, and I'm not sure maybe all or both or neither want to speak. But I'll suggest you call witnesses who are interested in coming up.
Absolutely. Thank you, Senator Marty. I only have the four here, Mr. Johnson, Ms. Ketchum, Mr. Burns, and Mr. Larson. Is there anybody else that wants to speak? So we have two.
Anybody, we can start with some of the ones who came up and then maybe have some of the others. I don't care what order. Maybe.
Yep, let's start over here because I remember you guys missed that on first, so come on up. And then we're going to go here. We'll these the two that were on the last that didn't get. We'll get those two. Ace.
Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome. Please stay for the record because you guys were missed out on last time and weren't added. So welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Chairman, members of the committee. As was stated, I was on the list last time. My name is Mike Berkepek. I run Ace Solid Waste. Ace Solid Waste is a company located up in Ramsey, Minnesota. The company's been around since 1955 as a local independently owned company. And for the last 20 years, it's been owned by a fellow by the name of Andy Schweitzer, who lives in New Brighton, Minnesota. And last time, Andy wasn't able to be with me, but today he is, and this is Andy right here, and he will have a couple of comments later, and then I'll let Mark introduce himself, who he is, and then I can give a couple of quick comments.
Thank you, Mr. Berkepek. Mr. Berkepek, go ahead.
Okay. Obviously, I've introduced myself, and I've actually been around this business quite a long time and recognize the history of the ordinance that we're, or the law we're currently talking about. It's really an offshoot of the Waste Management Act back in 1980. This particular law that we're talking about changing came in 1987 when there was a recognition that with all the changes that are happening with the state and all the requirements from the state, that small haulers who have been around quite a long time servicing the needs of the community need a chance to continue to be working. And over the years, that has gone a lot of different ways. As a matter of fact, in the city of Champlin and the city of Ham Lake, it was worked out, and the haulers were able to keep working. That was back in 87 and 1990. Then there was kind of a period where not much happened, and then now recently, and obviously we heard from them last time, the city of Maplewood went through the process, and admittedly it was a contentious process. And the reason it was a contentious process was because there were businesses operating in that community, had operated in that community quite a long time, and they didn't feel, obviously, that their voice was getting heard. So what's happened, and this happened since the last time this issue was up, meaning Tuesday, is we sensed that there was an opportunity to talk about it a little bit more in detail and actually get folks to finally, at least in our opinion, finally recognize that the businesses operating in the community do have some value, have done some things, and is there an opportunity to give them something in writing where they can sit down and talk to the city and really try to work something out. This has worked in the past. As I mentioned earlier, it worked in the city of Ham Lake, and it's continuing to work today. It's worked in the city of Champlin and continuing to work today. But that was quite a long time ago. I think the purpose of this amendment and this change is that it further clarifies the intention of both parties. So we're supportive of the new amendment. We're glad that we were able to get in line with the cities. That's really it. As a background, I should have mentioned a little earlier, as I said, I'm with Ace Solid Waste. Mark is with Randy's. In addition to those two companies, the other folks who couldn't be here, remember, we're all working every day, so they weren't able to be here today, is DSI, or Dick Sanitation, out of Lakeville, Walters Refuse and Recycling out of Blaine, Tennis Sanitation out of South St. Paul, and actually they're the ones who were most significantly impacted in the Maplewood situation. They lost 20% of their business, not just a little bit. They lost 20% of their business because of that Maplewood situation. And then finally, West Central Sanitation out in Wilmer, Minnesota.
Great. Mr. Bergepeck, thank you very much for the overview. And you have two folks with you. I'm looking at the interest of time. There seems to be stacking up again.
We'll go fast.
And I want to give us. So who do you have next?
Andy.
Andy, Mr. Schweitzer, for the record, please state who you are and where you're from. And
my name is Andy Schweitzer. I own the garbage company Ace Solid Waste. My wife and I have owned that for 25 years. It's a 55-year-old company. We're up in the North Metro area. And although it's a corporation, to me it's all personal. I own it. I operate it. Mike runs it. But I'm there every day. It has a big impact in my life. We continue to invest in the company, in the community. We've been there. Well, we employ 87 people right now. That's been good for us. I was asked to say a few words now, and I'm here to suggest the amendment we put forward has has a big impact. This organized hauling ordinance has a big impact on our business. It's hard to operate a business when the threat of government taking your business is out there. So it has a big impact on me and my family and all those that we employ and the community that we support. That's really what I had to say.
Thank you, Mr. Schweitzer. The amendment, members of the committee, I was just dawned on that the amendment you guys are talking about is one that is yet to be handed out, that we haven't looked at.
To be distributed. It's
yet to be distributed.
First,
yep, that's exactly right. Thank you, Senator Marty. Thank you. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mark Stoltman, and I'm the Vice President of Randy's Environmental Services. We're based in Delano, Minnesota, with locations in Rogers and in Burnsville. Randy's is a family-owned business. It was formed in 1979. We have husband and wife as owners and five sons that participate in the business on a daily basis and, frankly, that we're grooming to run the next generation of the company. Our company has been very busy in the past 2 to 3 years. We have put in a compressed natural gas fueling station, and we're in the process of converting our fleet from diesel fuel to compressed natural gas. Currently, we've converted 30 trucks, which, from the perspective of the environment, not only is better from an emissions standpoint, but they are about 7 or 8 times quieter in the neighborhoods than are the diesel equivalents. We've been working the organics arena in order to try and remove organics from the waste stream. About 8 years ago, we pioneered a project with Hennepin County where we worked with the city of Wayzata. After the program was out a couple of years, we won a governor's award and a National Association of Counties award for our organics program. And we've recently streamlined it so that we can eliminate a truck on the roadways and combine that with mixed municipal solid waste and collect that and separate it. Those organics are taken, and they're made back into planting soils with leaves. We have put in a single-stream recycling facility in the last 2 years, converted from a dual stream, which we had, and we have the only privately held mixed municipal solid waste processing facility. So we take your curbside household trash, and we separate that in our night shift, pulling the recyclables out and creating a refuse-derived fuel once we've taken the meaningful recyclables out of the waste stream. The reason I mention those things is we really feel that we, as independents and all independents, small businesses, provide a meaningful position in the marketplace. We do things and in many ways can drive the industry to become better. We move fast, and we have to because we don't have land disposal as an alternative. So, consequently, we're here today to support the bill with the amendment that is yet to be passed out, with the understanding that from a standpoint of a market share, part of what we do to put all those programs in is rely upon the waste stream that feeds them. So, from that perspective, we believe that the cities and what they're attempting to do makes good sense. We believe that from a road wear and tear standpoint, we believe from a safety standpoint and reduced truck traffic, those are all good ideas. But we also believe that the communities that we've served for the last 30 years would also believe that we would stand and should stand a chance to operate within that market because we provided services that truly are innovative and have helped the market move forward.
Thank you very much, testifiers. We're going to hold questions until the end. We're going to get through. We want to get through all the testifiers.
What I think I would do is I think they're going to distribute the A4 amendment because they're all basically speaking to it, it seems. And I'm comfortable with the amendment. I've just now looked at. I heard the concepts, but I've now seen the language. So what I'd like to do is offer the A4 amendment and put that in front of the committee for consideration. And we would also, and I'll have Mr. Johnson explain it because I think he was the one who was meeting with haulers. And that's not saying all haulers are supportive of this, either the amendment or the bill as it is. But if we put that in forward, then we can speak to that. So, Mr. Chair, I'd move the A4 amendment and have Mr. Johnson explain it, and then we can discuss it and have more testimony related to that.
Mr. Johnson, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. So the mystery amendment that folks have been talking about is the A4 amendment.
You may use my copy.
And the intent that the small haulers approached the cities that have been working on this issue over the last couple of days and asked for us to consider a couple of the things that they've raised as concerns over the debate on this, and this language was the result of that we were able to work out. I'll just explain how it works in the bill. So right now, in Senate File 510, the process starts with the local government forming a committee to look at organized collection. The A4 amendment would take place before that. So what it says is, prior to establishing a committee, if you have existing licensed haulers in your community, you need to spend 60 days allowing them to negotiate for a chance to preserve their market share in an organized bid. They are required to put a bid together that addresses the local concerns that are trying to be met, whether it's number of trucks on the road or frequency of pickup or services provided, price of service, all of those different things. And essentially, they are allowed to bring in that first bid that reflects them preserving the share of the local market that they have previously had in a non-organized system. So that is the point of this. If that proposal comes forward and it's acceptable to the community, They can adopt an ordinance at that point to move into organized collection using that proposal. They do not progress through the committee and the process of holding a committee and doing all of that. It would just move to an organized collection system. If the proposal isn't working out for everyone, then you would go to the committee process and work your way through the process as normal. But that first opportunity would be for the existing local haulers to come forward with an option, and the city would be required to give them 60 days to work on that with the city. So that's the intent of the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Johnson, thank you. So if I understand you right, what we heard the last time we got together was an issue of transparency and notice and first right. And so I think this amendment, you know, handles those kinds of thematic responses that people gave. Members, in front of you is the amendment A4. Are there any questions to this amendment?
Mr. Chairman, because some of the haulers may have, I want to one more thing. In the amendment we adopted the other day, the A2 amendment, I had put in language giving a preference to small haulers, and I think as part of what they were thinking is we would be able to strike, that was not from the small haulers, but we would strike on the A2 amendment that was previously adopted, the language on line 1.8 through 1.11, the preference for small haulers, and I would intend to offer that as well. But before voting on either of these, perhaps we should give these folks like 1 minute to see if they had any additional comment, then have some of the other haulers who have not had a chance to be here.
Duly noted. Having said that, in the interest of time, anybody want to add another minute? 1 minute, Mr. Birkepeck from Ramsey.
Thank you, Chairman, members of the committee. I'll only just reinforce something Craig said a little bit earlier. The reason we're supportive of this is it because it provides a transition plan for us to move from a market, a subscription service market, to a contract market. You know, at the end of the day, we're still really kind of changing the way we do business, and we think that it's reasonable to have this transition plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Marty.
And, Mr. Chair, on that, the goal of this was not to choose who wins and who loses. The goal of this was to make sure we don't have 7 trucks going down a street for environmental and safety and cost reasons. And when they are negotiating, reality is going to be if his business has 1/4 of a city and they negotiate with the city under this language, the presumption would be they'd be about 1/4 of the city. They're going to be driving the trucks probably only 1/4 as much because they only have to drive 1/4 of the streets instead of the whole thing. So costs will come down for consumers. The safety and everything else would be there. And this allows, I think the industry and the cities tried to work out a good compromise, and I think this is reasonable.
Senator Marty, it does. It sounds like a win-win, and my community has worked well.
There may be other haulers who aren't as thrilled.
All right. So having said that, we have folks coming up. Julie Ketchum from Waste Management, John Burns from Republic, and then Peter Larson from Advanced Disposal. And we have exactly 12 minutes, so I would ask, again, in the interest of time, that we keep our testimonies complete, concise, and to the point. So who's going to go first? Ms. Ketchum, welcome. Please state your name and where you're from.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Julie Ketchum. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for Waste Management. And with me is John Burns with Republic Services and Peter Larson with Advanced Disposal. We're here today to testify on the bill. Senate File 510 will testify to the amendment the amendment that was just offered. Senator Marty's legislation makes it easier for citizens to go from an open hauling or subscription market where every resident gets to pick their own hauler to an organized collection market where the city either contracts with one hauler for the entire city or they organize the collection so that the city is sectioned off or better organized so that you have only one hauler or fewer haulers in that particular area. We feel that if cities want to go to a contract, they should be allowed to. It should be simplified. So we, although we're neutral on that bill, we really, underneath it all, we really support that effort. We think it's the right thing to do. As large haulers, again, we're neutral on organized collection. That is when a city wants to organize. They should be allowed to. They should be able to reduce the number of trucks going down the street. And our view is that these cities are our customers or our potential customers, And just like any restaurant, school, or other customer that we collect from, they should be able to make that choice. So if the customer, in this case, the city, wants to organize collection, so be it. We try to give the customer what they want. We try to meet the needs of our customers. Because our position on organized collection is neutral, we stay out of these organized collection public processes. We're not involved in the public hearings. We stay out of those city council meetings, and we stay out of those public relations efforts that are used to sway the public to be either for or against organized collection. But despite our neutral stance, we do have thoughts on whether this type of system is better or not. We do think it's better for the environment. We think it's better for business and better from a safety standpoint. There's no two ways about it. Organized collection reduces truck traffic on city streets. Our neighborhoods are quieter, they're safer, and collection is more efficient. I won't tell you where I live, but on my block there's 16 houses back-to-back on an alley, and there's at least five different haulers coming down the alley. So anyone in my hometown who knows who I work for, that's the first thing they say. How do we get down to one hauler? So from a business standpoint, organized collection means routes are more dense. We collect it more efficiently, and we get more volume from every household on the route. It's better route density means more efficient collection, less fuel used, less emissions, less greenhouse gases generated. It's all better for the environment. As large haulers, we are investing in the community and the environment. Waste management, we brought single sort to this market over 10 years ago. We collect, and Republic and Advanced quickly followed single sort. So we are reinvesting in the community. We're making a big effort to get as much more material out of the waste stream as possible. The city of Minneapolis today, they bought their own trucks, and they are now doing single sort. So they've increased their recycling rate 63%. So while we are big companies, we invest in the community, we are able to drive innovation, and we are doing what's right for the environment. Waste management does have CNG trucks, and we've reduced our greenhouse gas emissions by 96% with those CNG trucks. Lastly, all of us, whether it's small haulers or large, we're all in the business of collecting recyclables and trash, and we provide these services for a reason. We like to compete, and we want to keep it competitive. And with that, on that point, all of us agree. We need to maintain competition in the marketplace. We don't want to limit it. And indeed, that's been the mantra of the so-called small haulers in this market, in the market, that they want to keep a free market system. They don't want to limit it in any way. So with that, I thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I would like to speak to the A4 amendment.
Thank you, Ms. Ketchum. You want to speak on that now? Mr. Senator Marty, and Ms. Ketchum again, for the interest of time, can we be as complete and concise as possible?
Just in general, this amendment is not in the best interest of the cities. You will not get competitive bids with this approach. If you lock in to only those contractors that are currently licensed in a city, it doesn't allow other haulers to bid on that first contract situation. So what you're doing is you're limiting the number of parties that can be in that open bidding process. You're making it less competitive, and the cities are going to have higher rates as a result of that. Once those contracts are locked in on that first go-around, even though it's a three-year time frame, the next time frame, it is very easy just to get a contract renewal. So what you're doing is you are limiting new market entrance into that market. So that, we believe, is not in the best interest of cities. We think if a city wants to contract and get down to one hauler and make it safer on their streets and more efficient, less emissions, quieter, less road traffic, less road damage, cities should be able to do that and should be able to do it with as little process as possible. They shouldn't have to be required to just look at those cities that are in the current market, or those haulers that are in the current market.
Thank you, Ms. Ketchum. Mr. Burns, welcome. State your name and where you're from, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is John Burns, and I'm attorney representing Republic Services, which is also known as Allied Waste here in Minnesota. And I'll be very brief. First, I had to step out for a minute, Senator Marty. It was our impression that the A2 amendment was going to be withdrawn as part of an agreement between the other haulers that testified in the League of Minnesota Cities.
Mr. Burns asked Senator Marty. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I was going to delete lines 1.8 through 1.11, the small hauler preference. I was going to delete that as well as offering the A4.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Marty. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Burns.
And very briefly, just to the A4 amendment, this is language that we just saw for the first time this morning after the hearing started. We're not able to form a position, but we certainly commit to working with the author, working with the league, working with the other parties going forward.
You know, Mr. Burns, Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to ask if this is going to judiciary next.
Now, Mr. Knopf, it's my understanding it's going to state and local. Senator Marty shakes his head in agreement. So, Mr. Knopf.
Next.
Yep. So,
Mr. Chair, some of these issues may need to go to judiciary too. I'm not sure about that. You may want to check with the committee.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Knopf. Senator Marty, we have the committee administrator check with that. Yep. Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Mr. Larson, welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thanks. I'm Peter Larson. I'm from Larkin Hoffman Law Firm. I'm here representing Advanced Disposal Services, and I will just be extremely brief. We haven't had a chance to take a position on the A4 amendment. We appreciate the removal of the preference for haulers under 200 employees, and I guess on behalf of our employees and our community involvement, I'd just like to say if you're thinking about solid waste policy in this committee, we'd love to come and talk with you about the same things that some of the other haulers that were up here talking about. We get along very well in our communities. We're very committed. The ownership of our companies might change, but the people who work on routes and in landfills for our company have normally been there for a very long time, and we're very committed to our communities as well. We wouldn't be able to do business in Minnesota if we weren't, and we'd be happy to come and talk with you sometime about that if you'd like.
Thank you, Mr. Larson. There was Senator Osmak had his hand up to in the queue. We're good. Any other questions?
So, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Rosen.
Senator Rosen.
It's okay.
Senator Rosen.
What did I say?
Ms. Rosen.
My God. You know what?
It's late.
I can't take those minutes back from last night, but I am right now. Senator Rosen, I publicly apologize for that, and it'll never happen again. Thank you, Senator Rosen.
So obviously this bill needs a little more work. Is that right, Senator Marty? Because I'm not feeling or hearing peace in the valley on the A4 amendment yet.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rosen, I'm not sure there will ever be peace in the valley on this issue. I hear less war in the valley, perhaps. I have a feeling that this bill and each of its stops is going to see more work. I think that this is a reasonable compromise to try and to address the concerns I think the cities and others have had, not just about cost, but also about road safety, about road damage, about environmental costs. And so I think that this is a big step forward. I'm certainly open to hearing more, whatever, but I don't want to portray this as everybody's thrilled. I don't think you're going to get that point, and I think our goal should be to try and make it work for everybody. And I will, when ready, I'll move the A4 amendment and then the A2 change.
We're going to get one more question. Senator Rosen, a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this will get more work. Senator Marty, you're very good about that and making sure that it goes to state and local, and we'll continue the discussion. Thank you.
Great. Senator Rosen, thank you. Senator Osmak.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just comments on this, because we didn't get a chance to, and we're probably not going to have much more than a minute, so I'd be incredibly fast. I understand that this is making the process faster. unfortunately, when you're taking away people's freedom and people's right to, and the government is interfering in the free flow of the marketplace, it should be difficult. This makes it less difficult for government to come in and do what government wants to. I appreciate the fact that you want to reduce admissions. I appreciate you want to reduce traffic. One of the comments that was made by the Maplewood individual that was here talked about the damage to roads. Well, local jurisdictions already have the ability to put weight restrictions on their streets. They can effectively tell garbage haulers that they cannot use large trucks if they choose to. If this was such a good idea, why doesn't small or local units of government go to restricting cable? They do have single cable, but you could even restrict satellite TV to say you can only go through the one we choose because we think it's the right one. Same thing goes with plumbers. You have to have a plumber to, and I just had a sewer backup in my house last weekend. The government could say, we're going to have a single plumber. We're going to get a great rate, but we're going to have a single plumber, and that's our city plumber that's going to do your services. Again, we're intersecting government and private sector, and I think we should make it as difficult as possible, not as easy as possible. And I appreciate, Senator Marty, you wanting to make it a little bit more easy for them to do it, but I think philosophically it's a bad direction to go. Thank you.
Duly noted. Senator Marty, do you want to talk about the amendment and the changes?
Mr. Chair, I think it's been explained. I think people understand. I think not everybody's 100% comfortable with it, but I think it's step forward. And to Senator Osmick's comment, this is 60 more days and an entirely new step in the thing, which would make it more difficult to do. But I think it's a reasonable step to try and bring people together without playing favorites among businesses. So I'll move the A4 amendment.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you. A4 is moved. Now with that,
Mr. Chair, on the other part, the A2 amendment that we previously adopted, I'd like to strike lines 1.8 through 1.11, which is the small business preference, and we've discussed that, and I don't know if there's – I mean, I'm happy to –
Senator Marty moves the striking of in those within A2 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion is moved. Senator Marty, that lays the bill in front of us as
Mr. Chair, this
wanted.
Bill goes to State and Local Committee. I want to check with City of Minneapolis. They already have organized collection. They wanted to make sure that they had a $60,000 bill for having to go through this long process, even though they already had it. They want to correct that. I want to see whether the language we have here addresses it. But I will, if that's okay with the committee, I will deal with that in State and Local Committee because, again, I don't think there would be any objection to their amendment if so. So I'll move the bill be recommended, passed, and referred to the Committee on State and Local Government.
Senator Marty has the motion out there. Senator Scalzi, did you have a question? No? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I saw the hand go up.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one quick comment, and I voted for the amendment. I am going to vote against the bill. Having been a local official for 16 years, I have the authority. I had authority when I was there, and together with the fellow council members and the mayor, to deal with these issues. And as Senator Osmick said, there are ways for councils to do this. Does this make it easier? Perhaps. But if it is important enough to be done, and city councils don't wish to do it just because it's difficult, well, then shame on them. Shame on them. And I don't think that we should be getting in the business of just paving the roads to make life easy. You know, there is a reason some of these things are difficult. And I'm going to vote against it. And thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Senator Weber. The motion is still open in front of all of those of us. Any more questions to Senator Marty? None. Seeing none, all those in favor of Senate File 510 as amended, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, same sign.
No.
No.
Passes. Thank you, Senator Marty.
Mr.
Senator
Chair,
Marty.
I think that's the end of the business here. I hope people have a good weekend without too many more committees before they get there.
And we got more to come. Senator Marty, this meeting is adjourned, and we'll be back. Check your emails. Thank you.